I wholeheartedly welcome you to the Anxiety Summit Season 2. Today our topic is called Hidden Causes of Anxiety, Drugs, Illness, Light and Balance. I'm your host, Trudy Scott. I'm a certified nutritionist, author of the Anti-Anxiety Food Solution, and I'm known as a food mood expert. Today we are talking to Sharon Heller, PhD, author of Anxiety, Hidden Causes. Sharon, a very big welcome to you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for joining and sharing your expertise. I'm really excited about this topic because it's different, new information, and very in-depth. So I'm going to read your bio and then we'll get started. Sharon Heller, PhD, is an author, developmental psychologist, and college professor, specializing in how poor nutrition, internal and external toxicity, drugs, and cranial sacral misalignment create sensory processing problems, anxiety, depression, and other mental health problems, and how to heal holistically. She received her master's degree from the University of Chicago and PhD from Loyola University of Chicago. That was a mouthful for me. Sharon is the author of a few books. The first one, Anxiety, Hidden Causes, How Your Anxiety May Not Be All in Your Head, But From Something Physical. Another one, Too Loud, Too Bright, Too Fast, Too Tight, What to Do If You Are Sensory Defensive in an Overstimulating World. And a third one, Uptight and Off-Center, How Sensory Processing Disorder Throws Adults Off Balance and How to Create Stability. And you can learn more at SharonHeller.net. For many years, Sharon suffered debilitating sensory defensiveness, head pressure, head fog, poor balance, visual processing problems, weakness, digestive problems, and fatigue for which conventional medicine could offer neither diagnosis nor treatment. She was told and assumed that her problems were largely from anxiety. Psychotropic medication had a minor impact in helping to reduce some distress, but suffering side effects, she promptly stopped. Something was very wrong, but what? Exploring various holistic modalities, she slowly discovered the causes and treatments for her symptoms. Sequelae from head trauma suffered 20 years earlier drove her neurological symptoms, while Epstein-Barr virus, candida overgrowth, mercury poisoning, and adrenal exhaustion drove her physical symptoms, all of which were compounded by unrelenting distress. Neurocranial structuring, biocranial therapy, magnetic resonance therapy, acupuncture, and other alternative therapies, along with a raw food diet, detoxification, yoga, qigong, and painting helped to heal and transform her life. She says, you too can heal. What a journey you have been through, Sharon.
Indeed. What a journey. And I'm really, I think, not an exceptional case at all. I think my experience is very, very common where people are in a state of distress. They're anxious, they're fatigued, they're not feeling well, and doctors don't diagnose what their problem is. And therefore, they're told that their problem is all in their head and put on psychotropic medication, when indeed, as it turns out, they may have some physical problem that's causing their symptoms.
Absolutely. And I knew I wanted to interview you on the Anxiety Summit when I came across your book. This book, Anxiety, Hidden Causes, is fabulous. Why Your Anxiety May Not Be All in Your Head, as you say, but from something physical. And we all biochemically unique. And as you heard in season one, and you're hearing in this summit, the cause of our anxiety can be varied, and there can be multiple factors. And we want to figure out what the cause is, or the, or if there are multiple causes, what they are, so we can get to the root cause and address it. But what if you've tried everything? What if we don't know what we don't know? And get ready for this interview, because Sharon is going to shed some light on some little known and hidden causes of anxiety. I think it's really important that we know about this. And you can hear from some of the things that she went through. She had multiple areas that she had to address. And I think that's something that we need to hold on to and realize that there is an answer out there. We just need to keep looking until we find the answer for us. And I would love you to just share a little bit more about your story, Sharon, because obviously there's more to it than we covered in your bio. But just share a little bit more about your story and how it started you on this path of holistic healing for anxiety.
Well, you know what? This is very interesting, Trudy, because what happened to me was when I was 40, I fell down a flight of concrete stairs and I landed on my head on concrete. I did not lose consciousness. I went to the emergency room, and I had stitches above my right eye. I had a black eye. They gave me an MRI, and it showed no brain damage. So I forgot about it. You know, the eye healed, and then I just forgot about it. Oh, maybe a year or two later, things started to fall apart. The first thing was I got TMJ, it took a long time to diagnose that. And then I started experiencing constant intense head pressure. And then I started becoming so anxious in terms of the sensory environment that I could barely go out in the world. I could not tolerate noise. If the phone rang, I jumped. I could not tolerate hardly any light, no sunlight. My house was dark. My house was quiet. If I put a sheet on my body to go to sleep at night, you know, the touch of the sheet bothered me, and I didn't know what was going on with me, and nobody else did either. And I had no idea that any of this could be connected to the head trauma that I had. And when I started to explore what was going on with me and to look for alternative healing modalities, it took about 8 or 9 years until I made the connection of the head trauma with all of the neurological stuff that was going on. And then in my particular case, I have a unique problem that really throws me off balance, because I have built up scar tissue above the right eye where the stitches were, and the scar tissue has gone underneath the frontal bone and attached to my right eye, and that creates problems that cannot be easily solved, and they won't do surgery on it. But in any event, I started then, when I began to realize that the problems were from the head trauma, then I was able to find a particular therapy called neurocranial restructuring, and there's only about 30 practitioners in the whole country, and luckily there was one near me, and that just, you know, really started to turn things around for me. And he was also a naturopath, so he also wanted to know about, you know, my nutrition and what I was eating. And then I began to then, you know, realize that all these, all the GI problems I had been having were related to candida because of the long-term antibiotics that the doctors gave me in my 20s. And I didn't know anything about candida. I just thought, well, you know, I have this weird system. And so, you know, he knew his stuff. So he investigated with me all sorts of, what could be going on. And then, you know, we made the connection to the Epstein-Barr virus, which had been diagnosed, you know, earlier. And there was heavy metal toxicity, and I had my amalgams removed. So all in all, I was very, very fortunate because I was able to eventually identify the reasons for all the symptoms I was experiencing. And, of course, once I knew the reasons, then I could start to know what I needed to do to heal. And I will tell you, I'm not going to go into diet and food at all because, you know, so many other people, including yourself, are addressing this issue. But let me just say that I went raw about 12 years ago, and Hippocrates Health Institute is right near me, so I basically followed their protocol. And once I started going raw and once I started really detoxing, and I have been going on long fasts for many years, I tell you, the emotional issues, the mood issues, and, a lot of the, you know, the irritability and constant agitation really, really just drastically reduced. And, I mean, I can't impress enough to people who are listening to this how everything that I'm going to discuss with you from here on in terms of how illness can cause anxiety and on and on and on, you could do what you can if you know that you have these particular problems to heal your anxiety. But if you don't change the way you eat, you're going to be limited on the changes that you see. I mean, this is absolutely, absolutely essential.
That's great. But, wow, 8 to 9 years before you started to make that connection. And then how fortunate that that you worked with someone who was, directing you and helping you look at all these other areas, especially the diet. I'm so glad you talked about diet because it is so, so important. And it just gives us the foundation so we can heal. And it's very interesting that you talk about this connection to head trauma. And I was just heard a presentation at the Integrative Medicine for Mental Health where they were talking about the trauma that the NFL players are experiencing and how that is affecting them long term. And then I saw an amazing documentary on the damage that these football players are getting from all the head trauma that they're receiving and how it's affecting dementia and mood and anger issues and all these problems. So we don't want to take head trauma lightly. We really don't. And I'm just so glad that you found someone to help. I'd love to go into neurocranial restructuring. We might have to have you back to talk more about that one on another interview.
That's powerhouse. But let me make a distinction here, because football players are having TBIs, traumatic brain injury, which means that there was an actual hard neurological insult that affected their brain. Now, I had head trauma. My brain was not affected. So why is it that I had all these problems? Because what happened was when I fell on the concrete on the right side of my head, my whole head and spine were thrown out of alignment. When this happens, then the neurotransmitters cannot communicate. And therefore, the whole nervous system gets affected. So, all the kids who are playing football, even when they're knocked down and they're not experiencing TBIs, they're going to have problems just from the misalignment that's created by the head trauma, even if they don't have traumatic brain injury. So I think this is something hugely neglected. And I'm going to venture to guess that there are going to be so many people with aha moments who are listening to this right now who said to themselves, oh, wait a minute, okay, so when I had that car accident and I didn't pass out, but yeah, my neck was thrown all out. And after that, I got TMJ and I've had headaches and so on and so forth. And this is really important stuff to understand, that I think there's very little attention paid to this because the media is making it sound as if you have to have repeated TBIs to get really debilitating effects from these kinds of traumas, and that simply is not the case. And in fact, they are finding now that when they're looking at these kids who are playing high school football, they are finding that even one accident can have long-term effects.
Right. And then just for people who may not know what TBI is, traumatic brain injury, just want to make sure people know what that is. And I'm really glad you make that clarification. And I just got an aha moment because I talk about the perfect storm of things that happened to me, gluten issues and digestive problems and low blood sugar and soy and mercury. But I hadn't made the connection to a rollover car accident that I had in my 20s. And you just gave me an aha moment. And we rolled the car and we were all fine. I had a little tear, a little wound on my toe, and that was it. But I never got my head checked out, and maybe that was a contributing factor to some of the anxiety that I experienced later. So thank you for helping me with that aha moment.
Right. No, I venture to guess that lots of people are going to have a similar experience that you had.
Well, thank you. Thanks for making that clarification. And I'm glad you finally got some answers. And now you're sharing this. It's just so, so powerful. So let's go into the next point, which is you know, we know that anxiety, and certainly in your case, it is often misdiagnosed. It's misdiagnosed as psychological, when in fact it's some kind of primary physical cause that's causing the anxiety. Let's just talk about maybe one or two other examples where we might see something like this.
Okay. Say someone has panic attacks, which is not uncommon, and particularly panic attacks that come out of the blue, out of nowhere. All of a sudden, you know, one day you get a panic attack. Okay, a wave of panic overcomes you, your heart races, your pulse throbs, the world spins, you can hardly catch your breath, you feel as if you're dying, you feel this horrible, profound dread, you know, even as if you're losing your mind. So what do? You assume it's psychological, so you go see a psychiatrist, and they diagnose you with panic disorder, and they give you psychotropic medication. And usually these drugs do what they're designed to do, and they do alleviate the panic. And so you think, okay, it's psychological. But, you know, first of all, it may not disappear, or it may come back, but you know, not as strong, because actually lots of physical conditions can cause the same symptoms. And that includes hypoglycemia or low blood sugar. Did you say you had that?
I did, yes.
Right. Hyperthyroidism, which I'm going to talk about. Hyperventilation and mitral valve prolapse, which is a benign heart murmur and quite common, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later on. But I have mitral valve prolapse. My sister has it. I don't know how many friends I have who have mitral valve prolapse. It is really, it's really quite common.
Very interesting. So why do you think these misdiagnoses happen?
Well, you know, doctors do the best they can, but they tend to look at anxiety symptoms through a narrow lens and, you know, and see only the psyche, certainly, you know, psychiatrists for the most part. But the thing is, you see, anxiety symptoms are not specific to anxiety disorders. Any anxiety symptom can indicate a biological problem. So let me give you some examples. Sugar imbalance to heart problems to vitamin deficiencies can produce symptoms identical to a panic attack. Head injuries, you know, as I had, brain tumors, strep throat, and encephalitis can create obsessive compulsive behavior. Environmental pollutants and allergens can produce panic like symptoms. And I'm not finished. Poor food, illness, infection, poor sleep, internal toxicity, environmental toxicity, poor posture, neurological problems, hyperventilation, all can create anxiety symptoms. And I go over all of these in my book. So just because you are experiencing anxiety does not mean that this is necessarily psychological.
So important, and I'm so pleased that you mentioned some of these, and we're going to go into some of these, obviously, in this summit.
A little bit more depth.
Yeah, we're talking about food intolerances. We're going to talk, you know, you heard from Dr. Tom O'Brien on gluten. We're talking specifically about heavy metals and mercury toxicity, and then also general environmental toxicity. So we'll go, you know, we cover that in some of the other interviews, but today we're going to talk about some of the illnesses and then some really interesting things that I was not aware of until I came across Sharon and her work. So let's go into a little bit more detail on some of these physical causes that you talk about, and there's certain diseases that could mimic anxiety. So it's not all in your head. It's actually a disease process that's causing this. So let's start with hyperthyroidism, which is overactive thyroid.
Yeah, which often goes undetected. And let me tell you about my friend Maya, because I have this case in the book, and this is really incredible. I mean, she was always nervous from the time she was a small child. She would refuse to go to parties because of the noise of the bursting balloons. She was excused from going to church. She would frequently faint or become sick during the service. Now, this is, you know, you have to understand, she's a young child when this is happening. By adolescence, she had constant panic attacks and to the point where her mother often had to take her to the ER because her heart was pounding so furiously she thought she was dying. It got to the point where she told me that she even contemplated suicide a few times. By her 20s, a psychiatrist diagnosed her, by no surprise, as having panic disorder, and to help her relax, put her on the tranquilizer Valium, and she became dependent on it. And we're not going to get into the problems with taking these psychotropic drugs today, but this is very common for anybody who's taken Valium or Xanax, which replaced the Valium. It's very easy to become dependent on the drug. She also went into therapy, but in spite of the therapy and the drug, she still barely functioned. Now she's in her 30s, okay? So she's working, and her heart is beating so wildly she can hardly focus on what her clients are saying. Now finally, in her 40s, a physician diagnosed her with hyperthyroidism. Now, this is, I mean, this started when she was a child. So you're talking about like 35 years of being misdiagnosed until finally she was diagnosed with the hyperthyroidism. He prescribed Lopressor, a beta blocker, to bring her heart down. And unfortunately, it was at the point where he had to irradiate her thyroid and put her on a thyroid hormone. However, once that happened, all the panic attacks ceased. And her anxiety ceased. It was history. It was gone. It was strictly from this hyperthyroidism. Now, is this unusual? Not really, because as some of your audience may know, it's very common to have hypothyroidism, which is it's hypothyroidism creates depression. And women need to know this because it is so, so common. Hyperthyroidism is not as common as hypothyroidism. However, both hyper and hypothyroidism can easily go undetected. And I am not a medical person, so I can't tell you why. But I'm not going to go into any details. But I do know that often the thyroid test that they will give you will not reveal that you have either hypo or hyperthyroidism. I think they have to give you a very specific test. And again, I just bet right now there's probably a lot of aha moments, you know, particularly of women saying, yes, yes, you know, I mean, I'm depressed, and yes, I know I have hypothyroidism. And maybe there are some women who are saying, wait a minute, you know, my heart too can beat 200, you know, times a minute. Maybe I have hyperthyroidism. So I think given how common thyroid problems are, this is something that really has to be investigated if you feel that you may suffer either hypothyroidism, which again easily leads to depression, or hyperthyroidism, which makes you very anxious. And then you could also have something called Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which produces hypothyroidism, along with some signs also of hyperthyroidism, and so you're both depressed and anxious. You sort of swing from low to high thyroid and experience really debilitating profound fatigue, poor memory and concentration, depression, and nervousness that can range from mild anxiety to full-blown panic attacks. So I think the thyroid has to be thoroughly investigated. And even if you go to your doctor and your doctor says, I'm not finding any thyroid problems, you need to, if you feel that you have a thyroid problem, you need to insist that your doctor do further tests, further more sophisticated tests.
Excellent. And I'm glad you brought up the Hashimoto's thyroiditis, because that's very common. It's the most common cause of thyroid problems of women in the U.S. Very, very common. And you know, they are, you need to test the thyroid antibodies, antithyroglobulin, antithyroperoxidase, and work with someone who's familiar with this. And we are going to have Dr. Hylacast talking specifically on the thyroid, so we'll be covering this in a lot more detail. But I'm glad you bring it up, and I just, oh, breaks my heart that Maya spent 35 years of being misdiagnosed. And
35 years? I mean, can you imagine the heart rate at 200 beats per minute?
Wow.
You know, yeah.
And then given Valium, which, as you say, is not a good class of drugs. I'm not a fan of benzodiazepines. And we hear from Dr. Prowski. He's going to talk about how he works with people trying to taper off the medication. So as well as her hyperthyroidism, the overactive thyroid, she probably had some additional issues from the Valium that she had been prescribed.
Yeah, that's all possible. And I'm so glad that somebody is going to be talking about this in depth. And I just, even though he's probably going to cover it, I really want to mention that for those of our listeners out there who have been using psychotropic drugs, the benzodiazepines, I don't know quite how to say that, and the antidepressants, that you can do the same thing with amino acids without the side effects. And I'm assuming that he's probably going to be going over that, because that's really important to know.
Yes, so he talks about GABA, and I just abbreviate them to benzo.
Yeah,
so that's easier than benzodiazepine.
Right.
But yeah, so he's talking about some of the nutrients that he helps folks with. He talks about niacin, niacinamide, GABA, theanine, and some of the other aminos that he uses to help people when they are wanting to taper off their meds. And I'm so glad you mentioned the amino acids, because I'm a big fan of aminos. They're great for helping you when you're trying to get off some of these meds, but they're also great to think about as a possible cause. You know, we're talking about some of these physical causes, and you mentioned earlier how the fall misaligned your neck and then affected your neurotransmitter production. Using the amino acids as a stopgap in the meantime while you're figuring out all these other problems is great, because it can start to give you some relief right away.
Yeah, and also aromatherapy is helpful. But I want to mention something which is so fascinating. The actress, I think her name is Margot Kidding, from the Superman series. Do I have her name right?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, she, about 15, 20 years ago, she was all over the news because she's bipolar. And she had been missing for a couple of weeks, and they found her, you know, amongst garbage cans in a total psychotic state. Okay, so Margot now controls her bipolar entirely with amino acids and supplements, and has been doing this for years. And she's on the Safe Harbor Alternative Medicine, Alternative Mental Health website.
Oh,
So you have someone like this who, not just simple anxiety, but, psychosis from bipolar disorder, who is able to control all of her symptoms naturally without side effects. So I think people need to listen to this gentleman speak. It's a very, very important topic.
Great. And I'll make sure that I find that information on the Safe Harbor site, which is a wonderful resource. And
yeah, alternativementalhealth.com.
Great. And we'll have a link on the blog that goes with this interview. So we'll make sure that we share that. Thank you very much. Now, I would like to just talk about two other things that can mimic anxiety before we get onto mitral valve prolapse. You talk about diabetes and then issues with the adrenals, and we do have a speaker going deeply into the adrenals, but let's just mention it because I think it's nice to tie all these things together.
Yeah, well, diabetes, before it's diagnosed, can also create anxiety and depression. And an anxiety disorder can coexist with the medical illness. This is true. But before it's diagnosed, higher or low blood sugar is going to create anxiety. And then another medical condition that can create anxiety symptoms and often panic is Cushing syndrome or hyperadrenalism, which results from excess circulation of the steroid cortisol and is caused either by hyperactivity of the adrenal cortex or by cortisol secreting tumors elsewhere in the body. However, in some cases, steroid abuse by athletes or others or prolonged stress can bring on the syndrome. So this is important to know. And as your other speaker will talk about, you don't have to have Cushing syndrome for your adrenals to malfunction. Anyone who is under extreme stress for a lengthy time will experience adrenal exhaustion and become anxious as a result.
Great. Yeah, the adrenals are so key. Okay, now I'd love to talk about mitral valve prolapse because this is something that is not talked about a lot, and you talk about it as being a very common condition that can cause you to feel anxious and maybe have panic attacks. So let's talk about what it is.
Yeah, it is. It is really amazingly common. I have it. My sister has it. I have all these friends who have it, as I mentioned earlier. So it's a common and generally benign inherited heart condition, which is, I guess, why my sister and I both have it. And let me explain a bit about it. Okay, so the heart, as we know, is a pump with four chambers. Blood moves through the mitral valve, the valve separating the upper and lower chambers on the left side of your heart as it passes from the upper to the lower chamber. With mitral valve prolapse, a slight defect prevents the valve from closing completely. So some of the blood can flow back from the lower to upper chamber and create a slight heart murmur. Now, in most cases, this isn't serious, although it absolutely has to be checked out if you have a heart murmur because in a small percentage of cases, it is serious. But most of the time, it isn't. Nevertheless, the resulting rush of blood can feel like a fluttering or a racing heart, sometimes accompanied by difficulty breathing and even chest pain. So not surprisingly, you're going to become anxious and you may even have a panic attack because it feels so terrifying, and I know how it feels. So strong is the relationship between mitral valve prolapse and anxiety that studies have found that 30% of patients diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder or panic disorder and 44% of patients with bipolar disorder have mitral valve prolapse. Now that's, you know, those are robust statistics.
Wow, and that's amazing.
That's amazing. And the incidence is far higher in women, and especially young women, the group most likely to experience panic attacks.
Wow. How does someone get a diagnosis of this?
What usually happens, and, you know, this happened with me, is that, you know, you're just getting a general physical checkup, and the doctor hears a slight heart murmur. And so in my case, you know, the doctor said you have a slight heart murmur, and it just so happened that with everything that was going on with me, which kept my body and hyped up and agitated to an extreme so that I was in a very severe state of distress all the time, and that included heart stuff going on. So I was experiencing irregular heartbeat and some angina and some palpitations. And so in my case, he said, you probably should have this checked out. And then, you know, then it was discovered that I had moderate mitral valve prolapse. There's mild, moderate, and severe. And I think severe is when they may have to do surgery, but mild and moderate, it just has to be watched. But I would encourage anyone whose doctor tells them that they hear, my mind just went blank. I don't know. Help me out here.
So if someone
heart murmur, you know,
yes,
that they should have it checked out, you know, to see if you have mitral valve prolapse. Because if you are experiencing anxiety and you have mitral valve prolapse, you know, that could be implicated. And what do you do about it? And, of course, you know, the doctors will put you on meds. However, basically, for the most part, you just need magnesium and enough magnesium. And, you know, I don't know if one of your other speakers is going to address this, because I am not a medical person, so I don't want to go into details. But,
perfect.
You know,
we have a whole talk on magnesium.
Excellent, excellent, excellent.
So you just tying all the pieces together. That's why
I am really tying all the pieces together. Okay, if you have any heart problems, you know, do not miss that talk on magnesium.
Perfect. So what about high blood pressure? That's also a heart condition, and there's, you're saying that there's sometimes anxiety that we see with people with high blood pressure.
Right, yeah, and millions of Americans, certainly, and not just Americans, obviously all over the world, suffer hypertension or high blood pressure. And though the exact cause is unknown, a number of conditions such as adrenal, thyroid, and kidney disorders may result in secondary hypertension. It can be symptomless, which is not good, because then you don't know you have it, or it can present with symptoms easily mistaken for an anxiety disorder, such as headaches, ringing in the ears, lightheadedness, fatigue, and irritability. And I know we're not going to talk any further today about cardiac problems and anxiety, but I go through like 7 or 8 cardiac conditions in my book that also can mimic anxiety.
Great. Then we've got these infectious diseases that can also look like anxiety, like Lyme disease and then also PANDAS. Can we just touch on that briefly?
Yeah, well, Lyme disease is big. Lyme disease is very, very big, because Lyme disease can create a slew of psychiatric symptoms, and it's easily not diagnosed. I don't know how many people, and maybe you've had the same experience, who it took them a long time to find out that they had Lyme disease, because they had the test and it was just not found. It wasn't. It's not easily diagnosed. But I know my friend's granddaughter was a little jitterbug, and the school didn't know what to do to make her sit still. And she slept poorly. She had great difficulty concentrating on her work in school. She was volatile and constantly fighting with her sister and brother. And the doctors didn't know what was wrong with her. Nobody thought of Lyme disease. And fortunately, as it turned out, they suggested a psychiatric workup, because this happened to be a really with it psychiatrist, who suggested that the mother have her tested for Lyme disease. And indeed, that's what the child had. And so after long-term antibiotics, the anxiety went away. She was able to sit still in school, do her schoolwork, sleep like a normal child, and get along with her siblings. Now, do you know how many children, you know, like Annie, there are who are given Ritalin, you know, if they can't sit still, right?
Yep.
You know, they're given Ritalin. Okay, so, I mean, yes, that was Lyme disease. But again, you know, if you ever watch Mystery Diagnosis on TV, one of my favorite programs, you know how common it is for people to suddenly go berserk from a tick bite that goes unrecognized for years. It's not always easy to detect. So let me just give people some idea, you know, those of our listeners, anybody who really was pretty normal and stable, and then all of a sudden one day became very anxious, had panic attacks, you know, I mean, extreme, even to the point of psychosis, you know, hallucinations, I mean, just really went berserk. If this has not been your history and it happened all of a sudden, then get tested for Lyme disease.
And it's tough to test for, and it's tough to find someone to work with. It's not cut and dry. Sometimes it is, but often it can be very difficult. So just to keep it as you know, something to look into and find someone who can help. And I will be interviewing someone on Lyme disease on the summit as well. So we're going to go into that in more detail.
Right, because I know, you know, I know cases where this has happened to people. They didn't end up getting the diagnosis until they found someone who specialized in Lyme disease.
Yeah, it's challenging.
As far as PANDAS goes, because I believe that you're going to talk about this elsewhere, but about 25 to 30% of children with obsessive compulsive disorder may actually have an autoimmune disorder called PANDAS, which is from strep throat. And now here's another situation where you might have a normal child, and the child gets a strep throat, and all of a sudden they become obsessive compulsive. And so let me just, you know, throw in at this point to our listeners as a red flag, any time a psychiatric symptom just emerges out of nowhere and does not seem attached to a specific troubling event, you have to think of the possibility of a physical cause. And so here's another instance where you can have a child misdiagnosed as having obsessive compulsive disorder when, in fact, first of all, they have PANDAS, and secondly, because they have strep throat, it actually can be dangerous if it's not treated.
Excellent. Yeah, and that percentage is crazy, 25 to 30% of children with obsessive compulsive disorder. And as you say, so many of them go misdiagnosed. And we did actually have someone speak extensively on PANDAS on season one of the Anxiety Summit. So it is another tie-in that you're making, which is important. But now I want to go on to drug side effects. And we often think about psychiatric drugs like the benzodiazepines, which we know can cause, you know, tolerance and side effects and all sorts of problems, and some of the other psychiatric drugs. But there are some non-psychiatric drugs that have some pretty surprising effects when it comes to anxiety. Let's just touch on a few of the ones that we may not think about that, you know, can cause these issues.
Okay, so I'm going to do that, but I really have to impress upon our listeners that all drugs, whether prescribed or over-the-counter, can create side effects, including anxiety. So, again, even over-the-counter. So let's talk about some non-psychiatric prescribed drugs that can cause anxiety. So the first one is lidocaine, which is used to treat cardiac arrhythmias or irregular heartbeats, as well as for general and local anesthesia, and which can cause doom anxiety. And then next is prednisone, one of my favorite horror drugs, you know. Prednisone, which is such a dangerous drug and is just prescribed so quickly, is a corticosteroid anti-inflammatory drug that can cause panic attacks, depression, mild mania, sleeplessness, disorientation, confusion, and even psychosis, in addition to, as you know, killing your liver. Okay, oral contraceptives involve powerful hormones and can cause anxiety, panic attacks, depression, and even psychosis. And they also deplete magnesium, you know, which, as we know, is an essential mineral for balancing the nervous system. And then we have Miralax, which is so disturbing to me because I know several parents who, as soon as their child has constipation, they give them Miralax. Well, you know, if you know about magnesium and you know about, for instance, Calm, which is, you know, a magnesium tea in a powder form, you know if you take that you're gonna get rid of your constipation very quickly. So no child has to be given Miralax, which is a neurotoxin. It crosses the blood-brain barrier and creates neurological symptoms. And then, it's not just prescribed drugs, even non-prescription drugs, the over-the-counter drugs. I mean, laxatives may contain mercury chloride, and when overused, lead to mercury poisoning, which can mimic heightened anxiety and phobic behavior. Diet pills are a stimulant, even when over-the-counter. Decongestants and antihistamines contained in many cough and cold medicines that people take routinely stimulate the heart and make people jumpy. Caffeine, the main ingredient no-dose and found in the cold remedy Dristan and many pain relief and menstrual relief formulas such as Midol, Excedrin, and Anacin can produce instant panic in the panic prone and panic-like symptoms in normal people. So, you know, I know that, you know, there's probably lots of people who are listening who know that they have to stay away from caffeine because caffeine can make you very quickly anxious. And, in fact, I have an article that I wrote for Hippocrates Journal where in some instances caffeine can create psychosis. But, you know, how many of our listeners knew that, you know, common over-the-counter drugs like Midol, Excedrin, and Anacin contain caffeine?
Crazy, really crazy. I'm so glad you mentioned these. And this is just a few of them. There's a lot more. The other thing that we see with these, a lot of meds, is that they can cause these nutrient depletions. You talked about magnesium with the birth control pill. We know it depletes folic acid. It depletes B6, vitamin B6 as well, which are important cofactors for making some of our neurotransmitters. So as well as these side effects that Sharon's talking about, we have these nutrient depletions that happen as a result of a lot of medication. So other things to look at and so important. So thanks for sharing those.
And also, when you really get involved in holistic healing, you begin to understand how many natural remedies there are that really, for the most part, unless you're really in a life-saving situation, make drugs unnecessary.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So before anyone pops a pill, I mean, just a very good instance here where, so I'm working with a 7-year-old little boy, and he has sensory processing disorders. So he has a compromised neurological system, and the father is giving him Miralax for the constipation, you know, just increasing the neurological problems. When again, you know, something as simple as, you know, calm tea, which is nothing but magnesium, does the trick. So why would you want to put something into your body that can create potentially dangerous side effects when something natural can do the same thing for you?
Exactly. And then with magnesium, with the constipation, you know, if someone's feeling they need Miralax, there are, you know, other causes that can, you know, contribute to the constipation. Certainly thyroid problems can definitely contribute. If you're not getting enough fiber in the diet, if you're not drinking enough water, there's so many factors. So, again, we've got to get to the root cause and address that rather than medicating and then causing these other problems. Really, really important. And why on earth they put caffeine in these medications, I just think is absolutely crazy. And I would love to get a link to that Hippocrates article on caffeine and share that if we could get that and share it on the blog.
Yes, I think that, I'm not certain, but I think that Hippocrates puts older editions of their Healing Our World journal online. So I think my article probably, my article was published, I think, 2 years ago now.
Wow, very interesting. I look forward to reading it and sharing it. Thank you. Okay, now we want to get on to another topic, different, but equally valuable to look at. And this is how vestibular or balance system in the inner ear can be a common cause of space-related phobias. And this was a totally new area to me and just fascinating.
It is absolutely fascinating, and it's so crucially important. We know phobias are considered almost purely psychological in origin and treated as such. Yet space-related phobias like fear of heights or claustrophobia, which are very common, may in fact start with a problem in the vestibular apparatus. So what is that? The vestibular system is located in the inner ear and controls sense of balance and direction, coordinates and sequences movement in time and space, and fine-tunes all sensory input. damage to the system can impair these functions, and you feel dizzy, disoriented, lightheaded, floating, faint, or nauseated, which are the symptoms of panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look closely at the causes of space-related phobias. Balance and coordination problems can come from a broken gyroscope, you know, again, vestibular in the inner ear, and trigger fear of heights, bridges, stairs, escalators, wide open spaces, and provoke anxiety, dizziness, lightheadedness, feeling off balance, floating sensations, spinning, falling, fainting, tipping, or swaying. All of this can come from a problem in the vestibular system in the inner ear. Then you have disorientation in space from a broken compass, and that triggers fear of tunnels, shopping malls, other disorienting situations, and provokes anxiety, disorientation, confusion, floating sensations, spaciness, lightheadedness, depersonalization, and dizziness. Motion sensitivity to change in direction, speed of movement, or sudden movement triggers fear of riding in a vehicle, an elevator, an escalator, roller coaster, boats, rocking chair, and provokes anxiety, dizziness, lightheadedness, nausea, and vomiting. A lot of people who experience panic attacks will tell you that the very first thing they experience is a loss of balance and disorientation. That's a red flag. That is a vestibular system in the inner ear. We don't have time to go into this, but as you may know, my area of specialty is sensory processing disorder. And the vestibular system, any problem with the vestibular system is a red flag for sensory processing issues. The vestibular system is the orchestrator of the entire nervous system. If it's off, you're going to feel some kind of anxiety, and if it's really off, you're going to feel some kind of panic. Now, what I'm describing here is how vestibular dysfunction can cause panic attack. But let me tell you, if your vestibular system is off at all, it can create anxiety because it makes you feel unsafe in space. And how common is it for your vestibular system to be off? How many people do you know who get carsick or seasick, who don't like swinging on a swing, who are a little bit clumsy or who fall easily? You know, does this sound like a lot of people you know?
It sure does.
Yeah, well, those are all vestibular issues. And so what happens when you have these vestibular issues is that you don't feel safe in space. You don't feel that, that you can be certain that you can navigate your world easily so that you won't fall, you won't hurt yourself. These issues are very, very common.
Very interesting. And I've got a question for you related to this, because it can be challenging to try and find what the cause is. So you'd really want to go and see someone who could do a physical exam, because a lot of the symptoms you describe here can also happen with low vitamin B12. And then I've also seen some research talking about how gluten can actually damage the inner ear. So, you know, it's important, I think, for folks to realize that, you know, you've got to still dig a little bit deeper, because when I'm working with people, I'll have them do all these questionnaires, and we'll often see a lot of overlaps in different areas. And then it's a matter of drilling down, seeing a specialist who can look at the ear to see if it is actually a physical damage. Is that a fair statement?
That is so fascinating to me. I didn't know about the gluten connection, and this is very important for my work. So I really appreciate that. And the whole system works together. And let me go back to head trauma, where what happened to me, again, it was not traumatic brain injury. It was only head trauma that misaligned my head and skull. Okay, so what happens is if the cranium is misaligned, even very slightly, that throws off the vestibular system. One person I'm working with has vestibular issues, and I said, look in the mirror and see if your ears are aligned. And he said, yeah, he looked in the mirror, and his ears looked aligned. I thought, okay, so maybe that's not the cause of his vestibular issues. But I also suggested that he go and get cranial sacral therapy. And lo and behold, the first session he had with the cranial sacral therapist, she told him that his ears were not even, you know, that his ears were misaligned. And so that not only can be the cause of balance issues, vestibular issues, it also can be the cause of auditory defensiveness. So in all the people who really react strongly to noise, and that's many, many people, that can come. Well, everything starts in the vestibular system. So if you react strongly to noise, if noise really bothers you, it starts with a misaligned, with a problem in the vestibular system. It all starts, everything in the nervous system really starts with the integrity of the vestibular system. Let me just go and answer your question about what to do. You really, anybody who suspects that they have vestibular issues should see an ENT who specializes in balance issues, and they usually have a balance center. So I wouldn't just go see an ENT. It's important to go to one of these balance centers, and they give you a whole huge protocol to determine whether or not you have vestibular issues. If you do have vestibular issues, they're actually not that hard to fix. You know, you can do some rather simple exercises that they give you to fix them. So it is, if you suspect vestibular problems, you know, it's a very good idea to go to a balance center and have the whole thing checked out.
Very interesting. I didn't know about the balance centers with ENTs. And talking about balance therapy, I actually saw a physical therapist earlier this year because I had some neck issues, and one of her areas of expertise is actually helping people with balance issues. So, you know, there's many ways that we can tackle this, and maybe seeing a physical therapist can help with that as well. So I think, first figuring out if that is the issue and then finding some of these solutions. Wonderful.
Actually, I would, rather than a physical therapist, I would strongly suggest a cranial sacral therapist.
Okay. Great. Okay, next interesting topic, light. How can that cause anxiety?
I just much more easily than people realize, photosensitivity is a condition in which you find it difficult to tolerate bright light and visual patterns. Now, some people are just light sensitive and sunlight really bothers them, but some people really cannot tolerate visual patterns. With some people, sunlight is a problem. Bright incandescent lights and fluorescents are a problem, especially older ones that buzz and flicker. But other people, and I'm one of them because I had trauma to my eyes, have color distortions, various hypnotic patterns bother them, like tiled floors, moving cars, oncoming headlights, wallpaper patterns, flickering lights, blurred images, darkness, various visual and color patterns created by stationary or moving crowds, and you may have a hard time in malls and supermarkets, and you are not someone who is going to go see Avatar in 3D, I will tell you that right now. This can come, as it did for me, you know, from trauma. And here are some examples of undiagnosed light triggers. Fluorescent lights contain certain colors or color distortions, as well as pulsing vibrations that make older lights start to buzz and flicker, and this stresses the body's nerve endings, confusing and overwhelming the nervous system. And as a result, fluorescent lights in the workplace, the gym, the classrooms, and supermarkets may unknowingly cause you to quickly feel drained, spacey, agitated, and often acutely anxious. So if you're one of these people who, you know, your day has been going pretty smoothly, but then you walk into the supermarket and suddenly you feel anxious, look at the overhead fluorescence, you know, as a possible cause. Social phobia. In social settings, bright lighting will render you unable to make eye contact and you seem a social phobic. Agoraphobia. In public places, bright lights may also be the fear finger that pushes the panic button for many agoraphobics who are commonly photophobic. So that is very common with agoraphobics, that they are photophobic. And so unknowingly, the light might be setting off their panic attacks. Hyperactivity. Bright lighting and fluorescent lighting in classrooms causes or contributes to hyperactivity, something that has been documented for over 30 years now with time-lapse cinematography studies.
Wow, very interesting.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. What they've shown that when they have kids in the classroom, with overhead fluorescent lights, and then they put in another classroom full spectrum lighting, you find that a large difference in the hyperactivity. So the lights in some of these cases might be setting off the hyperactivity. And also, if you have a problem driving at night, is really a nightmare for anyone who's photophobic. The bright street lights of oncoming cars can scream at you, and the sensation of flickering, blurring, or hypnotic effects created by objects that pass in front of you or next to you overload your visual circuits. So anyone who's exhibiting these kinds of problems, you know, you may have photosensitivity. As to the causes of photosensitivity, any insult to the nervous system can impact vestibular processing and cause photosensitivity. Because, again, the vestibular system runs the whole nervous system. So if you have photosensitivity or light sensitivity, it is starting with dysfunction in the vestibular system. So as a result, photosensitivity commonly accompanies many neurophysiological disorders, including migraine headache, yeast overgrowth. We know about that, right? Brain tumor, and Arnold Chiari syndrome. Now, this is not very common, but it's a neurological condition that my sister had. And for years, she felt anxious and panicky when in the supermarket or other brightly lit places, but she didn't associate it with the lights. She hated to go to the supermarket. She finally found out that she had Arnold Chiari syndrome, which is another case. It took her like 12 years before a neurologist, you know, finally diagnosed her with Arnold Chiari syndrome. She had the surgery to correct it. And then after that, fine. No light sensitivity, no headaches. You know, all of the symptoms went away. This is not that common a symptom, common a condition, but it does exist. It is difficult to diagnose. The primary symptom of Arnold Chiari syndrome is headaches and especially tension in the back of the neck.
I had not heard of that condition. That's very interesting. And I think it's so interesting that you're talking about this because have you seen that nutritional deficiencies can contribute to this? I've seen some research on issues with bright lights at night being related to low vitamin A. And when I think of this, I also think about needing to support the adrenals. Have you seen that those are factors as well?
As far as I'm concerned, everything starts with the integrity of the gut. If the gut, I mean, first of all, you know that, you know, 90% of serotonin is created in the gut. So if you have, if the, if you are not feeding your brain what it needs to function, then you're going to have problems in all sorts of areas. So, absolutely. I so firmly believe this, and I so firmly have seen this in my own case. And I must tell you, I have to share this with you because, I, like so many people, lead a stressful life, and because of that, sometimes I go off my good eating regimen, and going off my good eating regimen is not what, I never eat junk food, so to speak, but, going off my good eating regimen is eating, too much coconut milk ice cream, say, but I cannot, I have to be really strict, with my diet. And so I'll get really, stressed out and, start eating again, Ezekiel's, bread. And then I start to deteriorate and I start to feel, more jumpy and a little bit more moody.
Yeah, you need to be nourishing your body.
Huge.
And we are running out of time, but I would love you to just finish up by talking about the consequences of this, of misdiagnosing these physical causes of anxiety or psychiatric. This has been so amazing. We've covered so much information. But let's just end, with what the consequences are.
Well, first of all, you're probably taking unnecessary drugs, because if you suffer anxiety, a good chance your general physician or psychiatrist will have put you on psychotropic medication, which, as the cause is not psychological, may be unnecessary and cause side effects. You may be in unnecessary therapy. I mean, you may be struggling in psychotherapy that is expensive, time-consuming, unnecessary, and completely misses the mark. You will have lost time. Years may go by as drugs, psychotherapy, and often an endless pursuit of self-help techniques and stress reduction strategies fail to pay off. And, you end up feeling, just invalidated and confused and frustrated and still anxious. But worst of all, and I guess, we'll end with this, worst of all is that a serious organic condition such as hypoglycemia, hyperthyroidism, or a brain tumor even can progress undetected and worsen. I just will tell you just at the very end, for those of our listeners who don't know, George Gershwin died of a brain tumor, and it was not diagnosed till the very end, and he was losing his balance and getting headaches, and he was just being told by his friends that he was doing this to get attention. He had all of these severe symptoms. And then all of a sudden, the world heard one weekend that he had died of a brain tumor.
Very sad. So we need to know that there is an answer out there. If you are anxious and you haven't been helped by the common things that we hear about, changing your diet, eating quality protein, balancing blood sugar, getting off gluten, and you just not getting the answers, then think about some of these things that Sharon's talked about, because it's been so enlightening and your work is fascinating. And I really appreciate the work that you do, the fact that you're sharing this and your wonderful books. And I just want to say thank you so much for doing the work that you do and for coming on the summit and sharing this. And I want to encourage everyone to check out your wonderful books. You can go to sharonheller.net. We'll have a link to that and the books on the blog that goes with this interview. And Sharon, thank you so, so much.
And thank you for the opportunity to contribute, Trudy.
And anything else that you want to add, Sharon?
I would like to make one final comment, which in my view, unless you've had a traumatic event that would lead you to become anxious, that I believe that in most cases, anxiety probably starts with a physical cause, and then the anxiety is the secondary cause because it becomes anticipatory. So I believe that, something physical causes you to become anxious, And then you worry about becoming anxious, and that's the anticipatory anxiety, and then you get into anxiety disorder and even panic disorder.
It's very profound to actually think of it like that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any final words of wisdom?
Oh, just you're in charge of your body. Just keep on, keep on, keep on exploring till you find out what the underlying problem is. Don't listen to anybody who tells you it's all in your head if you don't feel that way.
Perfect. What a great ending. Well, thanks again, Sharon, and thank you, everyone, for listening in. This has been an absolutely enlightening and fabulous interview. And we'll catch you all on the next call. This is Trudy Scott signing off from Hidden Causes of Anxiety, Drugs, Illness, Light, and Balance. I hope you learned as much as I did. Thank you.